This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 3rd of October, 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week? Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. Well, we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962. 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. Those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And you can also access this recording through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And the recording is also available on the Southampton community radio stations, Awaz Radio and Fiesta FM. And so on with our headline stories. The first from you, Deborah, please.
Huge solar farm given the go-ahead. Fears raised over impact on villages and countryside. Plans for a massive solar farm have been approved despite demands for it to be scrapped. Philip Silk of Conrad Energy applied to Winchester City Council for permission to build 63 hectares of solar panels across 10 parcels of land across Shedfield and Wickham. According to the application, the solar farm will operate for 40 years. Objections have been raised by councillors and residents who fear for the site's impact on nearby villages. The plan, which includes the construction of transformer stations, site access, security measures and landscaping work, was approved by the council's planning committee on Wednesday, September the 24th. Representatives from both Wickham and Knowle Parish Council and Shedfield Parish Council addressed the committee, asking for the plans to be scrapped. Councillor Robert Broad from Wickham and Knowle Parish Council said, "The sites are not sustainable or economic. The sites would impact two villages. Granting permission would set a dangerous precedent. We strongly object to the planning application." Meanwhile, Councillor Francesca Byrne of Shedfield Parish Council warned that allowing the development to go ahead would impact the annual Wickham Festival, as one of the proposed sites is used for parking. Councillor Neil Cutler, ward councillor for Southwick and Wickham and deputy leader of Winchester City Council, also argued against the scheme. He said, "I have some direct experience of the construction phase and living near a solar farm. I remain unconvinced that an appropriate traffic plan can be put in place to limit disruption." Speaking in support of the application, Sharon Queenie of SQ Planning said, "The proposal represents a significant step towards a sustainable future for your district. This project will provide clean, renewable energy into the network. A benefit of the proposal is a commitment to biodiversity net gain." The applicant, Mr. Silk, reassured the committee that they will undertake careful planning and arrangement with local communities and stakeholders to avoid as much disruption as possible. Speaking in debate, Councillor Jane Rutter, chair of the planning committee, said, "I think that the planning balance is in favour of supporting this application, although it is a difficult balance to assess due to the number of sites involved." Councillor Paula Langford-Smith said, "I do have concerns about huge swathes of countryside being covered in solar farms. In this application, there seem to be concerns. I echo the landscape officer's concern that it is impossible for this not to impact enjoyment of the countryside. Councillor Jerry Pett said, I do have real concerns about disruption, and we need to make the conditions as watertight as we can. But having listened to all the arguments, I will be supporting the officer's recommendation. But it is right at the edge of what I find acceptable. The committee voted 5 in favour and 4 against.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, your story, please.
County local government reorganisation proposal submitted. Hampshire County Council's preferred option for the major shake-up in local government is on its way to Westminster. Conservative County Council cabinet members have backed the Council's best option for local government reorganisation to create 4 unitary authorities, 3 on the mainland and 1 for the Isle of Wight. As a result, Southampton, Eastleigh, New Forest and Test Valley would be merged into 1 single authority. At the same time, Portsmouth, Fareham, Gosport and Havant would each establish their own administrations. Basingstoke and Dean, East Hampshire, Hart, Rushmore and Winchester will be together in the north, and the Isle of Wight will remain a standalone authority. This is a different plan from that preferred by Winchester City Council. The City Council has sent a proposal formed by 11 councils across Hampshire, which will see a different formation of unitary authorities. At the Hampshire County Council Cabinet meeting on Friday, the leader of the County Council, Nick Adams-King, said that Hampshire County Council's proposal is the best option, ensuring financial resilience, retaining and improving services, and offering confidence to Hampshire residents that they will be enabled to engage with their councils. Councillor Adams-King said, We have put the people we serve at the heart of our proposal.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Emergency care plan receives MPs' backing. A new plan to tackle delays in emergency care is being backed by a Hampshire MP. Winchester MP Danny Chambers has supported the Liberal Democrats' new policy announced at the party's autumn conference, which aims to end corridor care and fix the NHS emergency care crisis. The plan includes a pledge for patients to receive routine GP appointments within 7 days and urgent appointments within 24 hours to ease pressure on A&E departments. Mr. Chambers said, "There has been an absolute failure to invest over the past decade by the Conservative government. 20% of people in A&E are there because they can't get a GP appointment. You've got people there with dental problems as they can't get an NHS dentist. You've got people in mental health crises turning up, and they are already on mental health waiting lists, sometimes for over 2 years, and they end up at A&E in desperation. The ridiculous thing about this situation is that we're using the most expensive part of the health system to treat people when they could have been treated much more cheaply and effectively." The policy also calls for £50 million annually to reopen ambulance stations and improve response times, alongside a new recruitment drive for community first responders. Mr. Chambers highlighted the impact of delayed discharges in Winchester, noting that 180 people are stuck in hospital beds who would be better served by social care packages. He said, "It costs hundreds and hundreds of pounds per night to keep someone in a hospital bed, but costs a fraction to give them a social care package. So this is not just better for patients, it's far better for the public finances too." NHS data reveals that A&E attendances in Hampshire topped 10,000 in June and July, up from roughly 5,500 a decade ago. Mr. Chambers has warned that the crisis could worsen as winter demand increases. He said, "The Liberal Democrats have a clear plan to rescue emergency care and fix social care. Our proposals will guarantee GP appointments within 7 days and urgent appointments within 24 hours to stop people being forced into A&E. We will ensure national high-quality social care for everyone who needs it, freeing up hospital beds and ending delayed discharges. We will open community walk-in mental health hubs so people get help early rather than ending up in crisis at A&E. And we will invest £50 million a year to reopen ambulance stations, launch a new recruitment drive for community first responders, and cut dangerous delays in response times. We are demanding the government take action now before more lives are lost and NHS staff morale plummets even further.
Thank you, Jackie. My headline story is Controversial New Town Plan Rejected. The government has rejected plans to progress a controversial new town in Hampshire. Micheldever New Town was proposed to the government in December 2024 by developer The O'Flynn Group as a suitable location to build up to 20,000 homes. The proposal came as part of Labour's Independent New Town Task Force, which was commissioned by the government in September 2024 to create the largest post-war house building programme. The task force was asked to identify high potential locations for new towns across the country and publish a report naming 12 the most suitable. Now, critics of the plans are celebrating after it was revealed on Sunday, September the 28th, that Micheldever New Town has not made the government's list. The Deva Society, a group founded in 1990 to fight plans to build a town in the area, has welcomed the Micheldever's rejection. The proposals were one of over 100 locations that were submitted to the council and were assessed against a range of criteria. The group has said that although it is relieved that the town didn't make the cut, it has warned that the reprieve may only be temporary. As part of the announcement made on September the 28th, the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government said that a strategic environmental assessment will be undertaken. The assessment will work to understand the environmental implications of developing a new town, with the Ministry stating that no final decisions on locations will be made until this assessment concludes. The leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Martin Todd, has also been a vocal critic of the plans, pledging to oppose them. At a Deva Society meeting in April, Councillor Todd described proposals for Micheldever New Town as like a bomb in the middle of the area. He added, "I can't even work out how you would do 20,000 homes. It's an absolutely enormous number. And the idea that you can have urban planning where you have the A303 going through the middle of it, the whole thing seems completely insane." A spokesperson for Micheldever New Town previously told the Chronicle the site can be scaled up to deliver in the region of 15,000 to 20,000 homes. It added that the town would help Hampshire and the South East tackle the housing crisis, with homes built to meet future standards and scheme-wide sustainable measures. Now we go on to the death notices, starting with Deborah, please.
Byrne, Lorraine Anne Byrne, on the 6th of September, age 79.
Caldwell, Jennifer Caldwell, peacefully on the 12th of September, aged 82.
Campbell, Michael Campbell, MBE, DL, peacefully at home on the 23rd of September, aged 82.
Hamilton, Maureen Louise Hamilton, peacefully, 11th September, aged 90.
Lane, Alison Louise Lane, née Hornsey, at Basingstoke Hospital on the 14th of September, aged 38.
Maynard, Helena Lola Maynard, at home on the 3rd of September, aged 102.
Malden, Julianne Dinah Malden, on the 13th of September, aged 80.
Robertson, Evelyn Joan Robertson, peacefully at Otterbourne Grange, 13th of December, aged 94.
Springer, Clive Springer, peacefully on the 2nd of September, aged 90.
Street, France, France William Street, known as Frank or Squidge, peacefully at home on the 12th of September, aged 78.
Underhill, Austin Underhill, peacefully on the 15th of September, aged 90.
Thank you. Now we go on to letters to the editor. There are 9 letters from the Hampshire Chronicle this week, and as usual, they're on a variety of subjects. So, Deborah, could you lead with the first one, please?
Yes, this is from the Reverend Paul Anthony Newman, and it's a recycling worry. I write concerning a policy aim of optimising or desirably maximising recovery of recyclable materials in light of the environmental and sustainability claims on the Inverde national website and the subsection relating to Winchester District volunteer partnerships, which are laudable. An apparent absence of any reference to recycling is evident here and appears absent in practice. Over several recent years at the annual Hat Fair, our organisers have contracted a Dorset supplier of temporary recycling bins for card, cans and bottles. Council contracted Inverde staff have resolutely refused to cooperate in their use as not part of their contract. Winchester litter pickers have for several years sought to separate cans and bottles for recycling, so it is neither impossible nor difficult. The voluntary Winchester District Air Ambulance Appeal started can recycling 4 years ago in support of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance Appeal, and in 2024 raised £13,000 with an approximate weight of 12 tonnes of recycled cans or 650,000 cans. My message to the CEO, board and executive cadres of Inverde is to go greener and sooner, please. Reverend Paul Anthony Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Richard G. Stead is concerned about local government spending. With the proposed creation of unitary authorities in Hampshire and other areas, an important question arises. How will these new organisations calculate, raise and spend the money that residents are required to pay? For decades, there has been deep dissatisfaction about local charges, often renamed or restructured, yet still widely felt to be unfair. At a time of such significant change, we deserve clarity. What plans are being considered by the government, councillors and civil servants to ensure that these reforms genuinely benefit local people rather than simply reshuffle responsibilities and names? Like most residents, I accept that local services must be funded. However, each area currently operates under different approaches, with some providing better outcomes than others. This period of restructuring presents an opportunity. Voters should be able to understand, compare, and even help prioritise which services are offered, rather than having decisions imposed without explanation. Cornwall, for example, has pursued such an approach for many years. Has he delivered genuine benefits for the people there? Who will guide Hampshire residents in making similar choices? It's also worth asking whether this initiative is truly about improving governance or whether it is primarily political. The Labour government points to Manchester and London as models of success under large Labour-run unitary authorities. But in this reorganisation in Hampshire, about meeting the needs and aspirations of local communities, or simply about extending political control? Now is the moment to demand transparency and fairness in how local charges are raised and spent. Residents deserve not only accountability, but also a real say in shaping the services we fund. An additional suggestion. If we're allowed to choose, can we demand that any incoming councillors will abide by our guidance and sign a declaration to do so prior to standing for election? And could this be compulsory? Richard G. Stead, St James Villas, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
And this letter's from Chris Gillam, and it's about destruction of landscape. I must apologise for such a late response to Chris Corcoran's letter of September the 7th. I thank him for an explanation of the field markings in Morstead Road, which I ought to have known since we were fellow campaigners against the Twyford Down cutting. I just hadn't realised that the Iron Age village extended so far along the Morstead Road. It is a valuable reminder of just how appalling the destruction of this landscape was in the 1990s, and the further destruction going on at the moment at M3 Junction 9. Your recent article on the renewal of the steps up from Plague Pits Valley to St Catherine's Hill ought to highlight the bizarre inconsistencies in this country's environmental and heritage protection law. I understand that Historic England required that the post holes for the new staircase had to be positioned exactly as before to avoid further damage to a scheduled ancient monument. While not disagreeing with this, I wonder how this organisation can justify such pernicketiness when, in previous form, it allowed the government to wipe out the main Iron Age village and scheduled Bronze Age monuments. It is not that times have changed, and we value such things more than 35 years ago. Historic England remains party to the plans for wholesale annihilation of large parts of the most important prehistoric landscape in Europe, the Stonehenge World Heritage Site, for a similarly unjustified project. It was not second thoughts that stopped it. And now Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves want to neuter these agencies in the name of some grotesque notion of economic prosperity. Ill fares the land. And that's from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. The letter that I've got is written by Graham Tillotson. It's headed, New Houses Need to Go Somewhere. I see that your regular Badger Farm correspondent, Simon Lever, last week chose to criticise plans for two separate housing developments in Eastleigh and Fair Oak areas, which between them would create almost 6,000 homes. The lack of common sense and forward thinking being central to his criticism. I'm sure that Mr. Lever is aware of the acute housing shortage faced by this country and the concomitant targets placed on all local councils by central government. Such criticism is unhelpful in that doesn't solve the problem. So I wonder where instead and with what common sense and forward thinking does Mr. Lever propose to build? For example, the 12,500 new properties by 2031 imposed upon Winchester City Council without attracting any similar criticism from others. It's written by Graham Tillotson, Chill Bolton Avenue, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And I have a letter here from the said Simon Lever. And it's accompanied by a photograph showing a corner of a building where several roof lines meet and a large chimney. And indeed, in the gutter are lots of bits of tatty shrubs and things growing that shouldn't be there. And the letter says, for quite some time, roofing covered in moss, plus adjoining timbers and walls, has been left to deteriorate. It helps not that pigeons have further added much damage. Winchester attracts visitors from the world over. To witness such irresponsible degradation of an iconic monument such as the Buttercross and surrounds is unacceptable and indeed irresponsible. Whether it be the City Council or private company, action, not words, are urgently needed. Yours faithfully, Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Angela Shale thinks more OAPs will need to use the bus. With changes coming to driving licences in the UK, particularly impacting on older drivers who will be required to provide medical assessments and vision standards to renew their licence, it seems unfortunate that Hampshire County Council have decided to withdraw funding from vital bus services. The 61 between Winchester and Eastleigh and the 20 from Wickham to Fareham both provide an essential service for the many people who use them and those who may need them in the future. these people will be left stranded without access to medical appointments and essential services. Driving safety is essential. People often have to give up their driving licence for medical reasons, and this is likely to increase. This means that a good, regular bus service is essential. Angela Shale, Old Turnpike, Fareham.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
And this is also a letter about the bus service from Violet Rogers. Older people need bus service. I completely agree with regards to the 61 bus Eastleigh to Winchester. Is the idea to make life difficult for older people from Eastleigh to get to Winchester Hospital? Many people have used this service. It's a good idea to have at least a reduced service. Please think about the older people. And that's from Violet Ride Rogers of Archers Road in Eastleigh.
Thank you, Jackie. My letter is written by Mark Rowe. It's headed Free Speech and Respect. Each day I see a community in Winchester that is both rich in history and diversity, with people from all over the world who make the tapestry of cultures that is Winchester. People that help each other. People that treat like I do, treat people as equals. People that work hard, and those like me with disabilities who, to be honest, get by with the help of the fantastic community that we have. Communities make for the local community we live in, to the global community. We all must try to help each other. We must listen to each other's views and opinions. I remember one quote growing up by Voltaire. I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to death your right to say it. Let's have free speech and respect for each other. And when we learn about someone or something, we improve our knowledge and make the world a better place, not just for ourselves, but for others also. Let's keep community spirit going, help each other and talk, plus have the right to peaceful protest. And when we work, learn, help each other, as when we will truly have unity of communities. And communities matter. It is written by Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is written by E. Wright. The UK is over-governed. John Pitman, Chronicle, letters September the 18th, highlights a deteriorating political situation, together with consequent problems about the number 61 bus. From top to bottom, the United Kingdom is over-governed. The House of Lords, with 857 members, is the second largest chamber anywhere in the world. The House of Commons has 650 MPs, while America has 435 representatives, with five times the population. And we also have parliaments in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Locally, in addition to 78 Hampshire County councillors and 39 Eastleigh Borough councillors, Eastleigh also has five local area committees and 12 parish councils with 163 parish councillors. Little wonder that Eastleigh is the most indebted local authority in Hampshire and one of the most indebted in the United Kingdom. It spends more on debt interest payments than it collects in council tax. So it is the frontline services which continue to be diluted. Prior to the 1974 local government reorganisation, councillors could legitimately claim travelling expenses, but otherwise gave freely of their time. They were public-spirited. Since then, councillors have been paid a fixed amount, as well as other financial allowances. This has led to the emergence of the professional politician. Some are elected to more than one local authority and are sometimes additionally co-opted onto other public bodies and NGOs. Another nice little earner. The more the merrier. The 1974 reorganisation was prohibitively expensive and was just one of the contributing factors in the hyperinflation of 1975 and subsequently our country's grovelling approach to the IMF for a bailout in 1976 and national humiliation. Now another local government reorganisation is on us, and it will be soon seen if history repeats itself. With the economies of scale, however, much reduced numbers of councillors and reasonable expenses, it should be possible to reduce debt, improve services and reinstate the number 61 bus. E. Wright, Alexander Road, Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh.
Thank you, Deborah. Yes, that really made us laugh. Right, well, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write a letter to the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we go on to editorial comment, read by Richard, please.
And I need to explain what an HMO is, because maybe not everybody knows. An HMO is a house of multiple occupancy. So the question is an HMO a bad thing for your street? One of the Chronicle's most read stories this week has been a report of the planning committee allowing a house of multiple occupation in Teg Down. This story has attracted an unusual amount of attention, more so than similar applications would have done 2 or 3 years ago. But why? HMOs often stir unease in communities, but now, when there's been debate over where to house illegal migrants, migrant workers, asylum seekers and refugees, that unease has been amplified. There is currently a debate about whether former military sites, such as Fort Blockhouse in Gosport, should be opened up. That plan has also attracted opposition. Are people fearful that if the hotels close their doors, the Bibby Stockholm is off limits and military sites are no-go, that these people will end up in their neighbourhoods, perhaps living next door to them, in an HMO? HMOs, while they serve a vital role in providing affordable housing, especially for students, low-income workers and young professionals, can alter the character of a neighbourhood. They typically house more people than a family home, which can strain local infrastructure. Neighbours fear that parking will become scarce, bins will overflow and shared utilities will be pushed to their limits. Another issue is transience. HMOs often attract short-term tenants, which can erode the sense of community. There's also the fear of unregulated growth. In areas where HMOs proliferate unchecked, residents worry about their neighbourhoods being dominated by rentals. No, this is to say HMOs are inherently bad. When well managed and properly regulated, they can be a positive force in addressing housing shortages. But without oversight and community engagement, the risk becoming flashpoints for tension now more than ever. Local authorities must strike a balance, supporting affordable housing while safeguarding the integrity of the communities we serve.
Thank you, Richard. Well, the opinion piece this week is written by Joanna Lewis. It's headed Fashion on the Floor. Daughter, I love you more than all the stars in the sky, even more than all the clothes on your bedroom floor. This was the birthday card message from my wonderful mother last week. Priceless and spot on. Like many females of the species, regardless of age, perfecting the right ensemble of a morning can be a lengthy process. Sometimes when the big fella stumbles upstairs after work, he thinks, we've been burgled. I find hanging clothes back up challenging, particularly when they've formed an impressive pile. Whilst the iconic designer Jean Muir always insisted should not be put away immediately after wearing to let them breathe, I suspect she did not have the floor in mind. Yet in my defence, dear reader, we are between seasons. Is it autumn or summer? Blouse or jumper? Well, to be honest, I thought I'd nailed this dilemma. To avoid getting a September chill, I always go blouse and tank top. But this year, by adding wide-legged trousers for comfort, apparently I've gone very non-binary. My cool rating amongst the young people suddenly rocketed. Buoyed up by this unexpected success and new fan club, I felt bold enough to give the bright orange trouser suit an outing. What a mistake. For now, the campus was teeming with freshers who seemed to be all wearing black. Striding across the concourse, I felt like a children's entertainer. Why hadn't I gone the whole hog and accessorised with helium balloons? It was Coco the Clown with footnotes. So I wondered, what should I be wearing? I immediately did some research, which left me spitting feathers. Great big ostrich ones. Apparently, skinny is back in. What? Emaciated models with sunken eyes and joyless expressions? I thought we'd left that behind years ago, but no. Fashion commentators are now writing approvingly of Ozempic abs. Whatever that means. We want to see healthy, strong, empowered young women. As the hilarious Irish comedian Kyla Cobbler has put it, to hell with skinny. Let's get furious and let's get jacked. We want to be able to lift a car off an orphan and then breastfeed it if we have to. The picture gets worse. I then discovered that now available on the high street is a nude dress. A mesh bodysuit with a few embroidered sequins, as seen on young actresses at recent film festivals. Well, clearly they haven't walked down a UK high street recently of an evening or used public transport. You wouldn't last long in one of those. These fashion trends are largely being directed by men. Misogynistic egomaniacs who head up couture houses at the likes of Prada. And monsters like Kanye West. His controlling, coercive behaviour over his girlfriend regularly sees her consenting to go out for a KFC wearing a nude dress. Meanwhile, her boyfriend stares over her menacingly in a black boiler suit. Here, a total lack of meaningful equality has some benefits. At least we don't get to see him in his undercrackers. So, ladies, time to unleash some real-life female power dressing to help the younger generation. From now on, I am mostly wearing my autumn-winter garden collection. Bird's nest hair, shapeless cords, an ancient bra, manly jumper, Crocs and a beanie. And if that works for Monty Don, then why can't it work for me? Now we move on to Belgarum, which is an alternative look at the news. First item from Deborah, please.
Hot apple crumble launch. A baker is set to release a sweet seasonal special for Winchester shoppers. Owner of Carol Cakes, Carolina Adamczyk, 40, of Bishopstoke, will be launching a new apple crumble on Saturday, which will be sold from her food van on Thursdays and Fridays on the High Street near Sostrian Green. Oh, that's a new shop. The homemade crumble and custard will be a delicious and comforting addition, served hot from the market van, with quality apples imported from Carolina's home country, Poland. She said, "In my home, there was always an apple cake with crumble on top, and it was a tradition I grew up with. Now it is something I have carried into my own family, and my children absolutely love it. We decided to serve an apple crumble as something cosy and comforting for autumn and winter. I hope that people enjoy it, because then we can keep it all year round. Baking and experimenting in the kitchen has always brought me joy, and I wanted to open something of my own, but for a long time I was too scared to take that step. One morning I just woke up and thought, no, I need to do something for myself. So I said goodbye to my job, left London and opened Studio Bakery in Bishopstoke, and the article is accompanied by a photograph of Carolina standing by her van.
Could Deborah Jackie, please?
Southern Voices new members. Two young singers have joined a popular chamber choir as choral scholars. Southern Voices, based in Winchester, has welcomed the new members to the group. The scholarship, funded by the Doyley Cart Charitable Trust, covers all expenses. Applications remain open for alto, tenor and bass voices to join in January 2026. Rehearsals are held at St Paul's Winchester on Mondays from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. The new choral scholars will be performing in a concert on the eve of Remembrance Sunday. Tickets can be purchased via the choir's website or by contacting 0333 666 3366. And there's a photo of the two members, one young lady and one young man.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go to some items about what's on in the coming days and weeks, starting with Deborah, please.
It's Murder in Theatre. Theatre-goers are invited to take part in solving a murder mystery in Winchester. The Theatre Royal Winchester will host the performance of an improvised murder mystery production named Locomotive for Murder, the improvised whodunit. The event will take place on Friday, October the 10th, promising a twist on the traditional whodunit plot. The story follows four characters on board a train, with an inevitable death occurring. Luckily for the characters, a world-famous detective is on board, ready to solve the case, with the help of the audience, as only one person in the show actually knows who committed the murderer themselves. The improvisation group behind the show, Pinch Punch, hails from both London and Wales. They will rely heavily on participation from the audience, using their suggestions and stories to craft a unique mystery for the night. Audiences should expect shaky alibis and silver-tongued sleuths, comedic murder and violence, audience participation, innuendo, and occasional bad language. With audience involvement, the success of solving the case for the night is left to their ability to unmask the hidden killer. The performance will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Friday, October the 10th at 7:30.
Thank you, Deborah. Your piece, please, Richard.
An Evening of Fiery Music. An Evening of Fiery Music is bringing Spanish flair to Winchester. Winchester Camerata will perform a concert of Spanish and Latin American works at St Paul's Church on Saturday, October the 11th, as part of its twice-yearly programme. Andrew Moore, conductor of Winchester Camerata, said, "We've worked with distinguished soloists, as well as providing an opportunity for younger performers to spread their wings." The concert will open with a dramatic ritual fire dance by Manuel de Falla, and also features España by Albéniz, which evokes the warmth of the Spanish siesta and the passion of the tango. Tickets are priced at £20, with student tickets available for £5, which can be purchased at ticketsource.co.uk/WinchCamerata. The string orchestra regularly support charities through its performances, and this concert will raise funds for Home Start Winchester and Districts. Concert begins at 7 p.m. and the bar will be available before the performance and during the interval, serving wine. For more information, visit the Winchester Camerata Facebook page.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Iconic locos showcased. Iconic steam locomotives will be showcased at a popular railway event. The Autumn Steam Gala is returning to the Watercress line from October the 3rd to the 5th. Visitors will have the opportunity to see the famous engines 6007 Sir Nigel Gresley and 34059 Sir Archibald Sinclair, alongside the Heritage Railway's flagship 35005 Canadian Pacific and other home fleet locomotives. A main attraction of the event will be the chance to ride behind the first double-headed bullied train on the Watercress line since 2017, as 35005 Canadian Pacific and 34059 Sir Archibald Sinclair take to the tracks together. the 34059 Sir Archibald Sinclair, a rebuilt Battle of Britain class locomotive, is visiting courtesy of the Bluebell Railway. The home fleet will include 41312 LMS Ivat and the 35005 Canadian Pacific, which returned to the rails in March after a 14-year restoration project.
Thank you, Jackie. I think we have to congratulate Jackie because several of us round the table were laughing at that last piece, particularly the engine numbers, which obviously means something to somebody, but not to us.
No, not really.
Anyway, the next piece is written, Austin is the inspiration. Two dramas inspired by Jane Austen's works are coming to Winchester. Pies and Prejudice and Mr. Darcy's Sister will be performed at the Theatre Royal Winchester, two dramatic explorations of the food and characters in Austen's works. Pies and Prejudice will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester's atrium for just three performances on Sunday, October the 19th. The show was first performed by Winchester's Two Time Theatre in 2019 and is being brought back for the anniversary of 250 years since Austen's birth. The second show, Mr. Darcy's Sister, will see a monologue imagining the scandalous life of Georgina Darcy. Deborah, please.
Another piece about Jane Austen. Winchester Cathedral is preparing to host a special celebration in honour of Jane Austen in her 250th year. The event on Thursday, October the 16th, will feature the unveiling of a new memorial statue of the beloved novelist. The statue, made by artist Martin Jennings, will be revealed after the service by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire in the cathedral's inner close at around 3 p.m. Winchester Cathedral is organising the occasion to mark the 250th anniversary of Austen's birth and will include a performance from the actors of the BBC's 1995 adaptation of the novel Pride and Prejudice. Notable figures such as Joanna David, Susanna Harker and Adrian Lucas will deliver a dramatic reading from the famed book. Esteemed historian Professor Michael Wheeler will also delve into Jane Austen's enduring influence, and there will be tributes to Austen's literary accomplishments from hymn writer Rosalind Brown. The service from 2 till 2:50 will be ticketed due to the anticipated large attendance. However, it will also be live streamed on YouTube. Martin Jennings is famed for his recent portrait of King Charles for the Royal Mint.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, some bits and pieces of things that you might like to attend in the coming few days and weeks. Sunday the 5th of October, Twyford Waterworks is their autumn rally, so they will be open on Sunday the 5th of October. Wednesday the 8th of October, Animal Farm, celebrating 70 years of its publication and 30 years of performance, Guy Masterson reprises his breathtaking solo performance of Orwell's Barnyard Masterpiece, and that's at the Winchester Theatre Royal. Thursday the 9th of October, Giselle, this is also at the Theatre Royal Winchester, award-winning innovative ballet Kumru presents An Unforgettable Journey, filled with passion, betrayal and forgiveness. Going on to Sunday the 12th of October, there's a recital for the local homelessness charity, the Winchester Beacon. It's a choral music from the Renaissance to the present day. And that is at St. Cross Church, Winchester. Saturday the 18th of October, an organ recital by Gerard Brooks. That is at the United Church in Jewry Street, Winchester. Friday the 31st of October, Halloween Walk, a guided tour looking for ghosts and other ghastly goings on. Fancy dress is optional. That starts at the Information Centre at the Broadway, Winchester. And also on Friday the 31st at the Cheswell Theatre in Winchester, Mark Ponsford, who's a local raconteur and musician, will be presenting a one-man recital evening in aid of the Cheswell development. Now we have a Christian comment read by Jackie, please.
And it's by Philip Crinks. Seek and ye shall find. The story is told of an English banker who went on holiday in Antigua. As he stood in the harbour, a fisherman came in with a huge catch of tuna. The banker complimented the fisherman on his catch and asked how long it had taken to catch them. "Only a little while," said the fisherman. "Why didn't you stay out longer and catch more fish?" asked the banker. "Oh, I make enough to give my family what we need, and when I get home, I play with my children, take a stroll with my wife, drink a cold beer, and play guitar with my friends. I'm very busy." The banker smiled and said, "Listen, I understand business. I could help you. You should spend more time fishing and with the proceeds buy a bigger boat, several boats, eventually a fleet. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you could become the processor, then control processing and distribution. You could leave this village and move to LA, perhaps to New York. Then you could sell your company and retire." The fisherman looked at him and said, "And what will you do when you retire?" The banker said, "Well, I'm planning to do some fishing." This story raises the issue of how we think about our calling. Christians believe we each have three callings, or vocations: to live out the identity we have through baptism of children of God, to be members of a human family and wider community, and to do a certain kind of work or service for others. Our time on earth can be seen as our chance to explore these callings. The fisherman in the story seems, by God's grace, to have found fulfilment in living out his vocations as he understands them, as a father, husband and friend, and as a fisherman. He isn't at all tempted to deviate from that. At the same time, the banker is not necessarily wrong to explore whether the fisherman is really fulfilled. He might indeed be frustrated with his lot and feel called to a different role in his industry. The more ironic implication is that the banker may not be very fulfilled. Certainly he's interested, at least before long, in doing more fishing himself. Working out what we are called to is far from easy. Indeed, it can be a life's work. There are many distractions which can come from our own ego or from social pressures. But we know that God yearns for us to be fulfilled, for he is universal goodness, pure love, the highest wisdom. God wants us to come to him. Through his specific vocational call to each of us, he shows us how to do this. And even if we are sometimes frustrated, we know that God will in the end fulfill all those desires of ours which will bring us to him. After all, underlying all our other desires and aspirations, each of us has a desire very deep down, perhaps at times almost hidden, for God. "Knock, and the door shall be open unto you. Seek, and ye shall find. Ask, and it shall be given unto you." And that was by the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Thank you, Jackie. Those of you who regularly listen to these recordings will realise that we don't normally have Christian comments so late on in the recording process, and it's because I missed it earlier in the recording. Apologies for that. But before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up time for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 6:45 a.m. and set again at around 7:30 p.m. Now we go on to items of general news. The first item from Deborah, please.
And this is an article about the Blue Apple Theatre, 2 decades of changing lives. A local theatre company is celebrating 20 years of transforming the lives of people with learning disabilities. Founded in 2005, Blue Apple Theatre has been a haven for those who discovered the joy of acting had little or no opportunities locally. Over the years, the theatre has staged more than 40 productions, with hundreds, if not thousands, of people participating both locally and internationally. The theatre thanked everyone who's been a part of its journey, celebrating the significant impact they've made in changing the lives and opportunities for people with learning disabilities. A spokesman for the theatre said, "We would like to thank you all for the fun, joy, extremely hard work, for the miracles we see happening, and for keeping our vision alive." The theatre was founded because Tommy had discovered the joy of acting. With no local theatre opportunities, Blue Apple was born, aiming to raise the ceiling of expectation and opportunity for people with learning disabilities. Blue Apple Theatre has been a platform where people of all abilities took part, with everyone equally valued. Among the theatre's notable productions are a promenade performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream in 2010, an ambitious production of Hamlet in 2012, and a moving dance performance in London, where they won the Rediscover Your Heart Award. In the past year alone, 338 people with learning disabilities, both adults and children, took part in regular sessions across Hampshire, demonstrating the theatre's continued impact and reach. The theatre expressed gratitude to its actors, dancers, singers and their families, and all others who've been part of their journey, stating, "We celebrate and thank you, our wonderful actors, dancers and singers, for your commitment and the joy you share with us all on stage and in rehearsal." Blue Apple Theatre has performed in numerous venues across the UK and internationally, including the Minack Theatre in Cornwall, the Rose Theatre in Kingston and Westminster Cathedral, among others. Overseas, Blue Apple has offered workshops and performances in the USA, Greece and Italy. The theatre's impact extends beyond performances, as they've also been commissioned by various organisations to create plays and films tackling important social issues. Their play and film Living Without Fear, commissioned by the police and the Home Office, tackled hate and mate crime and was performed to ministers, MPs and chiefs of police in Parliament. Freddie's Story, commissioned by the NHS, raised awareness of the dangers of diagnostic overshadowing and demonstrated best practice in taking a history and gaining consent from someone with Down syndrome. The film was used for training in almost every NHS Foundation trust. The theatre also expressed gratitude to its partners, supporters and audiences for their continued support. In its 20th year, Blue Apple Theatre has joined Minstead Trust, making a beginning of an exciting new chapter. And the article has photographs all the way round of their productions over the years: Wizard of Oz, The Selfish Giant, Hamlet, Frankenstein, The Tempest, Lashings of Din Ginger Beer, and Tommy Jessop, who was the boy who founded it, in A Midsummer Night's Dream in 2010.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Flu vaccine for young kids. Parents in the southeast will be able to get their children vaccinated against flu at local pharmacies for the first time. More than 600 pharmacies will offer the nasal spray flu vaccine to 2- and 3-year-olds starting this autumn. This new scheme aims to make flu protection more convenient for families and will be offered alongside GP surgeries. Caroline Reid, NHS South East's Director of Commissioning, said making flu vaccines available in pharmacies gives parents of young children more choice and flexibility when it comes to getting them protected. "I urge all parents to bring their children forward to get vaccinated." Beginning on Wednesday, October the 1st, community pharmacies across the region, including those in supermarkets and on high streets, will offer both walk-in and booked appointments for toddlers and eligible adults. The pharmacy rollout is part of the wider NHS efforts to protect services during the winter months. Other initiatives across the region include mobile vaccination buses and teams delivering vaccines directly to nurseries to help reach more vulnerable people of all ages.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Charity celebrates 20th birthday with Big Bash. Homestart Winchton District's anniversary marking two decades of supporting 1,300 families across the area. Supporters, sponsors and volunteers enjoyed an afternoon of celebration to mark 20 years of Homestart Winchester and Districts. The celebration took place at Summers Close Recreation Ground on Saturday, September the 13th. Founded in September 2005 with just a steering committee and a dedicated coordinator, the charity has gone from zero to supporting more than 1,300 local families in 20 years. Service manager Liz Stannard said, "We couldn't let this landmark date go by without the chance to say a huge thank you to all the volunteers who have made such a difference to parents' lives and all the people and organisations that have supported us in so many different ways. Thankfully, the rain stayed away, and it was wonderful to meet up with so many families that we have helped over the years and to hear the stories of how their children had blossomed. It was amazing to see those children, some now in their teens, and one mum even declared that Homestart had saved her life." More than 150 people enjoyed free food, including burgers, fruit, cakes and ice cream, all with a lively musical accompaniment provided by the Dossers and the Alsford Ukulele Jam, performing as Wingin' It. Other attractions included balloon making, giant Jenga, crafting, Splat the Rat, messy play and face painting. VIP guests included Winchester MP Danny Chambers and the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Akwal, who declared that Homestart had gone from a tiny acorn to a magnificent oak tree in just 20 years. He congratulated all those who had worked so hard to make it happen. To cap it all off, Children in Need mascot Pudsey Bear called in to cut the celebration birthday cake and meet excited children who were eager to shake his paw. Liz continued, "We must thank the staff at the Carroll Centre for hosting us and coping with the huge number of hungry people. They bent over backwards to make us welcome. We're now packing away the bunting and looking forward to doing it all again in 5 years' time." And there's a wealth of photographs accompanying this article with the Homestart volunteers in bright blue and bright purple polo shirts with a brightly coloured Homestart mural, Pudsey Bear cutting the cake, people eating ice creams, and the mayor looking very happy indeed.
Thank you, Jackie. City's history is celebrated. Thousands flocked to enjoy the 10th annual Winchester Heritage Open Days Festival, spanning a decade of celebrating community culture and history. The festival saw more than 300 free events and attracted thousands of visitors from Winchester and Hampshire. The festival drew in large crowds as it embraced the national theme of architecture. Liz King, Chair of Hampshire History Trust, said, "One of the great things about Heritage Open Days is the incredible variety of events, and I've enjoyed hearing about the wonderful experiences shared by festival goers. Whether it was families making a day of it at museums, attendees meticulously planning their week around talks and tours, or passers-by drawn in by the pink bunting, everyone I spoke to was impressed by the quality of the events. The 10th anniversary of WHOD's is a real milestone for us, and we'd like to thank everyone who made this year a success. The festival offered a wide range of experiences for all, from exclusive access to historic buildings and atmospheric guided tours to family-friendly workshops and thought-provoking talks. Hidden gems across the area were open to the public, and local historians and creatives brought Hampshire's rich architectural history to life. The festival featured a variety of collaborations, access to historic buildings and themed events. Notable highlights included a headline event from the festival organisers, the Hampshire History Trust, featuring talks from local architects, including Hampshire County Council and Design Engine Architects. There are also family-friendly activities at Winchester College, Winchester City Museum, a walking tour hosted by festival sponsor Adam Architecture and community group Hyde 900, which showcased the historic Hyde area of Winchester, an exclusive open day at the Hampshire Chronicle, and music magic with a silent disco at Newport Minster on the Isle of Wight. People across Winchester and Hampshire were given the opportunity to celebrate the past and the architectural accomplishments of the area, while also being given the chance to learn more with a variety of events. The festival was packed with activities and events for all the family. Deborah, please.
MP asked about British values by pupils. Winchester MP Danny Chambers visited St Faith's C of E Primary School, where he was quizzed by primary school pupils about British values, democracy and citizenship. He visited St Faith's C of E Primary School on Friday, September the 19th, to answer questions from youngsters. Mr Chambers held an hour-long Q&A session answering questions about his life in Parliament and the lawmaking process, and was able to provide many local examples. The children were building on recent lessons about the monarchy and British values, including democracy and citizenship. Many pupils, impressed by Mr Chambers' previous veterinary career, asked about his experiences in that field. Beyond the classroom, the MP also spoke with the staff and parents, with local parking challenges being a hot topic. Benjamin Bond, head teacher of St Faith, said, "It was great to welcome Danny to our school, and he enjoyed meeting our fantastic children. We were both amazed by the depth of their questions and a passion to learn more."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Plea to register as donors. Hampshire Hospitals is urging people to register as organ donors and inform their families. The call came during Organ Donation Week, with the specialist organ donation team highlighting the life-saving impact of organ donation. More information on organ donation and how to register can be found at organdonation.nhs.uk by calling 0300 123 2323 or through the NHS app. The plea is particularly pertinent as NHS blood and transplant figures reveal that more than 44,000 lives have been saved or improved through both deceased and living donor organ transplants over the past decade.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Sun, that's S-U-N, helping stations save £32,000 in bills each year. An ambulance station is set to save £32,200 each year after becoming one of the first NHS sites in the country to fit new solar panels. Winchester and Eastleigh Ambulance Station installed the panels in a scheme that saw £180 million invested for schools and hospitals to install rooftop solar panels. The savings from the panels will be invested in frontline services. The new solar panels will generate clean energy and help the South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust save money on energy bills. The project is part of the government's plan for change, aiming to bolster public services across the country. Jonathan Guppy, head of sustainability at South Central Ambulance Service, said, "This is a hugely important milestone for the Trust as we take tangible steps to cut our energy costs and carbon footprint and release more money to spend directly on patient care. The installation at Winchester and Eastleigh is already making a real difference and is just the beginning of a wider programme of work that will deliver long-term environmental and financial benefits across our estate. The installation is the first of four that will be completed over the coming months. Combined with the growing number of electric vehicles joining the SCAS fleet, these initiatives will play a vital role in reducing the Trust's environmental impact. Together, they mark a significant step towards SCAS's net zero targets and ensuring the organisation continues to provide high quality care while protecting the planet for future generations. Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary, said, "Great British Energy is helping your local hospital save money on its bills to be reinvested into medical equipment and frontline health services. Across the country, solar panels are going up on rooftops or car park canopies to power classrooms and operating theatres with clean, homegrown power. This is our clean energy superpower mission in action, protecting our public services with lower bills and energy security." The introduction of solar panels by Great British Energy could potentially save millions reinvested into frontline services in deprived areas. Dan McGrail, CEO of Great British Energy, said, "Great British Energy has been set up as a publicly owned energy company to help deliver the government's mission to make Britain a clean energy superpower. Our ongoing solar rollout delivers tangible benefits to the people that need it most in our hospitals and schools."
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is headed "Charity Seeks Volunteer Puppy Trainers." A national charity is seeking at least 12 volunteer puppy trainers in Winchester to meet the rising demand for hearing dogs. Hearing Dogs for Deaf People aims to assist those affected by the increasing rates of deafness and hearing loss. The charity relies on a network of volunteers to train puppies who will eventually help transform the lives of deaf individuals. Winchester resident Judith, who was partnered with her hearing dog Pixie, said, "Pixie has transformed my life in ways I cannot fully express. She means the world to me." Volunteering involves caring for a puppy in your home and starting their training journey. All puppy trainers receive support from the charity, which also covers the costs associated with the care. Anyone living in Winchester or the surrounding area who wants to find out more about becoming a volunteer puppy trainer can visit hearingdogs.org.uk/volunteering/puppy-training. Deborah, please.
Hotter choice for new shoes. A premium shoe retailer will open its doors in the city centre in a unit previously occupied by a menswear shop. Hotter, which sells a wide range of shoes, will open in 17 High Street, according to the signs placed in the shop window. It reads, "Hotter coming soon. We can't wait to open and show you our latest collection, packed full of stylishly comfortable footwear." Suave Owl occupied the unit until its sudden closure in March. Opened in 2023 by business owners Anthony and Jessica Harvey, the store sold a range of plus-size men's fashion.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
A stepping stone to new models of care. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust is celebrating the official opening of its brand new Hampshire Orthopaedic Centre at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The purpose-built unit will provide elective surgery across for thousands of patients across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, delivering orthopaedic operations such as hip and knee replacements. It's hoped it will enable more orthopaedic patients to be seen and reduce waiting lists, with consultants from both Hampshire Hospitals and University Hospital Southampton operating at the facility. With 16 single-patient rooms, two orthopaedic theatres and multiple four-bedded patient bays, the facility will be used exclusively for this planned care. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive, said, "Throughout the project, we've been constantly working closely and collaboratively with our colleagues and partners, and this has been a shining example of effective system working. Our thanks to all those who've helped bring our plans for this new purpose-built facility to life." And Paul Grandy from Southampton said, "Opening this elective hub has been a collective effort between partners, bringing together clinicians and support staff from University of Southampton and Hampshire to deliver the state-of-the-art facility that will benefit thousands of patients in Hampshire for years to come. Protecting this resource from the pressures of an emergency site is a better model of elective care, and this successful collaboration is a stepping stone to new models of care across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Investing in the Hampshire Orthopaedic Centre allows us to increase the number of planned operations, such as hip replacement, shorten waiting times for our population, and support the ambitions of the NHS 10-year plan, which sets out a vision to provide more accessible care. The Hampshire Orthopaedic Centre is part of a national programme to deliver surgical hubs designed to increase elective capacity as part of the NHS England Getting It Right First Time programme, offering more patients quicker access to some of the most common procedures. Alongside the new hub, Hampshire Hospitals is currently building a new outpatient facility specifically for orthopaedics, scheduled to open later this year.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Plan for new HMO gets given approval. Plans to extend a Winchester property have been approved as planners decided not to go against a licence. CMSB Property Investments applied for the change of use of a house in Tegdown Meads. The application proposed turning the property from a 6-bedroom house to an 8-bedroom HMO, house in multiple occupation. The City Council Planning Committee permitted the plan on Wednesday, September the 24th. Margaret Holton, a resident of Tegdown Meads, voiced her concerns, warning it would be completely out of keeping with the character of Tegdown. She said, "The major concern of the residents is the number of cars which will need to be parked. The front garden of the property has been turned into a hard standing for the residents to park their cars. It is not large enough for them to park. Backing a car into the road is hazardous due to the speed on the road. It is overdevelopment and it is completely out of keeping with the character of Tegdown, which has a mixture of 3- and 4-bedroom family homes." Speaking in support of the plans, Rachel Lewis said, "We are aware that this has been brought before the committee due to concerns which have been raised. As noted by the planning officer, this proposal will not alter the street scene in any way. It will retain its appearance inside and out, which means it could be converted away from an HMO in the future. It has had a licence for an HMO since 2022. In debate, Councillor Anne Small said, "It already has a licence for 8 people to occupy the premises. I don't believe it is within our gift to oppose that, so I will be supporting it." Councillor Rachel Aaron said, "I think we do care about providing a whole range of housing for people, and there is a demand for this type of accommodation, so I will be supporting this." Councillor Brian Laming was a dissenting voice, saying, "I'm worried about the parking arrangement on this and the effect on the road, so I do not see how I can support this when I have opposed applications which have had similar parking." The committee voted to approve the application. 8 committee members voted to approve the plans, with 1, Councillor Laming, voting against.
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is headed Centres Boost. Around £12 million has been secured so that 2 day care centres in Hampshire can continue to offer services. The money, approved by Hampshire County Council, will be used to pay staff salaries at the Newman Court in Basingstoke and Cheswold Lodge in Winchester, plus cover transport costs for users, utility bills and offset inflation costs. With the decision, the County Council guarantees the services until a new provider is found. Conversations are taking place to secure new providers by April 2026. However, council officers indicate that if a provider is not found by then, the council will continue to offer the services. Additional time will then be provided to ensure a smooth and successful transition of services. A council officer said, "The county council would only withdraw from the delivery of these services once a suitable or alternative provider or providers, if they are separate providers for each of the 2 services, are in place and under contract. The centres currently support individuals' physical and emotional well-being, provide social interaction, engaging activities and professional care. In August, the County Council decided to continue offering the services until an external provider is appointed. The Chairman of the Health and Adult Social Care Select Committee, Councillor Bill Withers, said it was unanimous by the working group that we should get a private provider to take on the existing two facilities, and that was a no-brainer in many senses because the cost of doing so individually exceeded. The residents who used the services really did enjoy going there, and it was a big part of their life. To ensure that the standards were maintained and the ability to grow the membership for 5 days of the week, it made it quite clear to us that an outside provider could meet our needs and grow membership from the public and also give additional services. Deborah, please.
Petition is set up over local landmark hedge. The council bosses are demanding a homeowner cuts back a hedge described as a local landmark, over concerns that it blocks disabled people and those with prams from using the pavement. Helen Miller, who's lived in her Chandler's Ford home in Randall Road for 10 years with her husband David, received a letter from Hampshire County Council in June requesting their garden hedge be cut back to within their boundary. The pair replied to the council, fearing that significantly trimming the hedge would cause it to die and have a negative effect on nearby wildlife, saying that birds frequently nest in the shrubbery. Helen even suggested paying to have the pavement widened, but after not hearing back from the council, her husband David started an online petition with more than 150 people signing the form in support of protecting the hedge. Speaking to the Echo, Helen said, "It's a local landmark. We think the hedge predates us by 30 years, so it's been here a long time, and it's a low-traffic area. Lots of people in the area have had nothing but nice things to say about it, and it really does stand out. We fully accept the council's opinion and acknowledge the hedge extends beyond our boundary, but we've hoped to reach some sort of middle ground, and it's been really difficult as we haven't had much communication. We had a similar letter a year or two ago, and we trimmed the hedge and never heard anything again. So we try and maintain it the best we can." Helen also said that she had concerns for wildlife in the area if the hedge was to be cut back. She added, "Such a harsh cut would likely mean the hedge would die. We have birds nesting there and see hedgehogs too, so I think there are some wider issues to consider." In a statement, a spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, "We wrote to the owners of this hedge in June to request that it be trimmed back to the boundary of their property. This followed a report to us by a member of the public that it is encroaching onto the public footway, and a subsequent inspection by our highways team. While the hedge is generally neat, it has grown in recent years to take up more space, and it has now significantly limited access along the pavement, especially for those using wheelchairs, mobility scooters or prams. As the highway authority, we have a legal obligation to maintain access to the public highway and to raise concerns with private landowners about overgrown verges that they have a responsibility to maintain. We've now provided further clarification directly to the owner to offer more guidance. And there's a photograph of the hedge, which is very large and extends a long way, and it does actually extend over the pavement."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Tribute to community theatre stalwart Mary. Mary Margaret Dawson, named Whedon, of Doctors Lane, West Meon, passed away on Friday, August the 8th, aged 78, after a brief battle with cancer. In 1990, Mary moved to West Meon, where she married company director John Dawson. As well as holding a variety of positions in Hampshire and beyond, including a stint at the Royal Festival Hall in London, Mary was the inaugural artistic director of the Point Theatre, Eastleigh's first ever arts venue. Mary was a powerhouse in her support of local theatre, and for 3 years between 2008 and 2011 was a trustee of Winchester Theatre Trust, a charity which exists to safeguard the Theatre Royal building. From 2011 to 17, she served as a voluntary trustee of the arts and education charity Live Theatre Winchester, now called Play to the Crowd, becoming chair of the board in 2015. In addition to her professional career, Mary founded West Meon Theatre in 1993, a community theatre group performing a broad range of productions from Shakespeare to musical theatre to pantomime and cabaret evenings. Under Mary's leadership, the company flourished, playing in locations that included terraces, tents, gardens and churches, as well as West Meon Village Hall. Alongside the productions themselves, Mary was a tireless mentor, encouraging members of the company to step into directing and other production roles. West Meon Theatre is committed to honouring Mary's legacy and is planning its Christmas production, A Christmas Carol. She also devoted time to nurturing the next generation of young actors, teaching Lambda, running West Meon Youth Theatre and Saturday clubs. In her spare time, Mary was a keen skier and sailor and was regularly seen on her bike in West Meon and far beyond. However, her abiding passion was the theatre. Mary is survived by her husband, John, JD.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Plans to build nearly 50 houses given the go-ahead. Plans to construct 48 homes at Pitt Manor have been approved, despite the failure of a previous application. Stuart Garnett of Sherwood Homes appealed to Winchester City Council for permission to build the houses as part of a phased development. The application also covers the provision of landscaping, open space and drainage, the formation of access onto Killam Lane, and the demolition of existing buildings on the site. A previous version of the application was refused by Winchester City Council's Planning Committee in June due to a lack of affordable housing on the site and a failure to demonstrate that off-site provision would better meet priority housing needs. The new application was approved by the Planning Committee on Wednesday, September the 24th. Addressing the committee, Mr. Garnett, Head of Planning for Sherwood Homes, said, "This revised application hopefully addressed the concerns of the committee. We appreciate that affordable housing is a serious issue, and I hope that we have reached a good conclusion. Members will appreciate that in recent years we have had a pandemic, war in Ukraine and a cost of living crisis, and the house building industry has seen the introduction of non-negotiable costs. It is important to recognise the benefits being provided. New homes providing new jobs with a new park and playground."
Thank you, Jackie. Choir saved from closure thanks to Encore. A choir from Hampshire has been saved from closure by another musical group. Winchester Sings, which was led for many years by local musician Nigel, faced an uncertain future earlier this year. Encore Choirs, which already runs successful groups in other towns, stepped in to save the group. This autumn, Winchester Sings will formally become Encore Choirs Winchester, with weekly rehearsals during term time taking place on Thursday evenings from 7:15 to 9:15 at Vineyard Church, Winchester. Members of the public are welcome to come along and try it out, without auditions or the requirement to read music. Joshua Robinson, who leads all of the Encore Choirs, believes strongly in the power of song to bring people together. He said, "Singing in a group lifts the spirit like nothing else. Encore is about community, connection, and the simple joy of making music together. It felt like a perfect match to work with such a vibrant group. Encore Choirs is all about making singing accessible, uplifting, and fun." Mr. Robinson said, "Sessions are relaxed and welcoming, with plenty of laughter, cups of tea, and even the odd slice of cake. For those who do want to take to the stage, there are ample performance opportunities throughout the year." Encore Choirs also extended his warmest wishes to Nigel and his wife Jo as they embark on their next chapter. Deborah, please.
councillor grants set to be made available. Valuable grants will be made available again for county councillors to continue to support local businesses and organisations across Hampshire. However, each councillor will see the amount reduced from £8,000 to £5,000 due to the Hampshire County Council's financial situation. At a meeting of the authority's cabinet on Tuesday, September the 23rd, Councillor Janice Henderson reiterated to members that the grants are one of the most valuable things the County Council does. Councillor Henderson said, "We see pockets of deprivation in our divisions. We see communities that find it very difficult to access funds. And I think the continuation of the scheme would be really good. It doesn't mean that it can't be tweaked and adjusted to make it even better and more cost-effective. It is an incredibly valuable scheme, and I would be very sad should we lose it. Over the last 4 years, £2.3 million has been awarded to 2,164 organisations to support festivals, county shows, defibrillators, arts, performances, music events, and food banks. However, the review of the data rang alarm bells when officers identified that some organisations have a detailed awareness of the scheme and process, which enables them to benefit more effectively. The data also showed that multiple applications were received from organisations across separate divisions, which resulted in organisations receiving funding from different councillors, sometimes for the same project."
You, Deborah. Richard, please.
On a similar vein, funding approved to boost walking and cycling. A funding boost of nearly £550,000 to improve access and active travel in the Winchester district has been approved. The money will come from the Community Infrastructure Levy, which Winchester City Council collects from qualifying district developments to fund infrastructure projects that benefit local communities. Of the approved funds, nearly £300,000 will be used for a Hampshire County Council project that plans to build a new footpath next to Andover Road in Mitchell-Dever, making it easier for locals to reach the railway station. A further £36,000 will be allocated to another County Council project to upgrade a pedestrian crossing in Friarsgate to accommodate cyclists. The crossing is part of a key cycle route in the Winchester Local Planning Cycle and Walking Infrastructure Plan, which aims to boost cycling by creating better links from the outskirts of town to the city centre. Councillor Porter, Winchester City Council Cabinet Member, said the Community Infrastructure Levy is a vital way of channelling funding into valuable community infrastructure, and I'm pleased to announce this latest round of funding approvals. Applications can be made until Sunday, November the 30th.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
King Kevin has answers. Winchester's celebrity quizmaster, Kevin Ashman, delighted a full house at Abbey House. The event on Friday night, September the 19th, was to raise funds for the Mayor of Winchester's chosen charities for 2025-26, which are Trinity Winchester, WINAC, and Homestart Winchester. In his Life in Quizzing talk, Kevin regaled anecdotes from his school days in Winchester, his time in the civil service, and his notable game show appearances. Particularly celebrated was his unbeatable record of 41 points on the iconic Mastermind during his second attempt. Kevin has also set questions for Brain of Britain and has appeared in over 2,000 episodes of Eggheads. He discussed how his own civil service formed quiz team was so dominant back in the day that they were eventually asked to retire from competition. Audience members eager for insight into his trivia-packed mind posed a variety of questions ranging from personal interests, his weakest subject is alleged to be food and drink, to the more existential, where he confessed to sleeping well and not dreaming of quizzes. The event proved successful, raising ample support for the Mayor's charities, which continue to provide support across Winchester. Kevin will be hosting the Mayor of Winchester's big charity quiz on Saturday, February the 28th at Littleton Millennium Hall. Tickets for this and other events, from Bollywood to a murder mystery, are now on sale from the Mayor's website.
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, just another reminder, if you have any problems with your recording, the content number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Deborah.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.